Indeed, as we prayed with John, the focal point is the death of our Lord. And that ought to be the motivation to us to seek that standard of truth that we also prayed about with John. That's the deciding factor. Not what we've done for 50 years or what renowned preachers say, but rather whatever would accord with the will of the Savior who loved us and died for us. And that's why we're studying these lessons and hopefully help us to better understand His will. Some of you may not have been here for Lesson 8, or even if you were, it might be good just to mention again what we covered in the first part of this two-part study on denominationalism from an organizational perspective. And it's very important that we understand what the word church means, the kind of noun that it is. Church is not an event. Church is not a theology. Church is a group of people. It's a collective noun and it collects people. So we looked at that in that first lesson. Now, if you collect Christians, you can call it a church. That's what the New Testament does. If you collect churches into a group, what is the word in the New Testament that describes that? There isn't one. That's correct. There isn't one. We have a word in our language that collects churches. What is it? Denomination. That's what the word denomination does. Okay, so now you'll know, you might remember on our lesson, we have broadened the meaning of the word church in our society. Not that this is New Testament meanings, but one of the ways that the word church is used today is to include all denominations. That's our usage, not a New Testament usage. We've also used the word church to refer to the administrative body of a denomination. The church has decided it's wrong to eat meat on Friday, for example, as the administrative body of a denomination. And then, unfortunately, even among our brethren, we have come to assign a meaning to church that includes congregations, that is, churches of Christ. And you will find that usage in the writings of our brethren, and we're going to see some of that tonight. So, we move on now to our study this evening. Lesson number 9. We have at the top of your lesson the word denomination. Why are definitions of words we use important? What are they important for?
So we understand what we're talking about.
That's right. So we understand communication. And so if you use the word denomination, I use the word denomination, but we have different meanings, we will not communicate. We'll talk, but there's no communication. And so it's important that we understand how we're using it tonight. So you see that I've got a definition. Now, this is not the only definition of denomination. Denomination is a group of churches, and sometimes it's used to group churches that share a common faith or theology. That's a legitimate use of the word. But we're looking at another aspect of it. Churches may share the common faith, but something else, a common government or centralized government. So you see the definition, number one, that's on your lesson is from Webster's Seventh New Collegiate Dictionary. So this is not from a definition from a gospel preacher or literature written by gospel preachers, but from the dictionary is how people use the word denomination. A religious organization uniting in a single legal and administrative body, a number of local congregations. Then I went to another dictionary just to confirm that this is a common idea, a usage of the word, American Heritage Dictionary, a group of religious congregations united. Remember the word, the idea of a collective noun, groups. That's the idea here. But now what it's grouping is congregations, not people. Congregations united under a common faith and name, a note, usually organized under a single administrative and legal hierarchy. This next quote that I have is particularly interesting because of where it's taken from. You'll see it's taken from the Standard Manual for Baptist Churches. I wanted to put that in there not only because he does a very good, clear, concise description of the concept, but also to show that this is not uniquely something that those in a Church of Christ teach. That people who studied the Bible, regardless of whether they're Baptist or whether they're members of a Church of Christ, can see this particular point. So here is Hiscock's Standard Manual for Baptist Churches. Some Christian denominations include all their congregations in one comprehensive society. Note again, collecting, not people, congregations, collective noun. In one comprehensive society or ecclesiastical system under some central authority. That's what we're seeing in each one of these definitions. A centralized form of government of some sort between the congregations. This authority legislates for and controls the whole. This comprehensive society they call the church. Now that's that broadened use of the word that we talked about. Thus we speak of the Roman Catholic Church or the Episcopal Church or the Presbyterian Church, where the word church stands for the aggregate of all their societies. He goes on and has some other stuff I didn't put in the quote, and that's, you can see that by the ellipses that are there. I'll drop down. He said, a church, therefore, is not a system of congregations confederated under a general government. Now, you see in the paragraph before, that's the way he used it. He said, that's the way people use it today. But in the New Testament, that was not the case, is what Mr. Hiscox is saying. He's correct. So it's not a system of congregations confederated under a general government, but a single local congregation of Christian disciples associated in covenant and meeting together for worship. That's a good definition of a local church, by the way. And so, in this sense, he said the word is commonly, almost uniformly used in the New Testament. Now, is that correct? That's what Lesson 8 dealt with. Lesson 8 showed that's the way the word church was used. But now we're moving to the idea of collecting churches into a group and examining that further. So we have under, on your outline, a denominational centralization of oversight. Now, what's particularly interesting about this first one, I have Baptist. Now, Baptist, you may remember me reading this to you last time, that Baptist teach that their churches are autonomous. What do we mean by autonomous?
Self-governing.
Self-governing. That's what they teach. But it's not what they practice completely. Mr. Hiscox is arguing for that in this literature. I want you to remember that because we have brethren that teach very well the autonomy of the local church, but in fact have fallen into the trap of practicing denominationalism. That is, putting churches under a centralized government. That's what the Baptists do. So I put here Baptist conventions. The Southern Baptist Convention does not collect all Baptist churches. It collects the Southern Baptist churches that send delegates and funds to that convention and work through that centralized oversight. That would be the Southern Baptist denomination or church. In that sense. Methodists rule by conference, Lutherans by synods, Catholics, of course, by the bishops and the Pope. Now, we have churches of Christ working through. So, if it's Methodist, they work under the oversight. Their funds are controlled by, decisions are made by their conferences. Lutherans by their synod. Churches of Christ sometimes centralize their funds for helping orphans under orphan home. First question is whether or not churches of Christ have the obligation to people that are in need if they're not Christians. That's another study. But be that as it may, some orphan homes have boards. Some orphan homes are run by elders. And churches contribute to these homes. And those, either that board or those elders, and brethren are divided about how it should be done. But be that as it may, some are under boards. And then brethren decide, okay, we want to preach the gospel. That's a great, great desire, is it not? It's worthy. But the problem is it takes more money than what this church has to preach the gospel in Africa and South America or whatever. And so a church assumes the oversight of that work. Listen carefully. They assume it. Here's why I say assume it. I'm going to ask you a question. Is elders' oversight assumed or assigned?
It's assigned.
It's assigned to what? The local flock. The flock among which? What two verses? What?
1 Peter 5,
2 and? Acts 20:28. These are on your outline tonight, along with Acts 14:23. You see them down there? Now, Acts 14:23 is on there because they appointed elders, plural, in every church, singular. And so in each church that was mature enough to have elders, they appointed elders. Those elders were to oversee that church. According to Acts 20:28, 1 Peter 5:3. So, elders assume a work they cannot fund, and so then they solicit funds from other churches, and they use those funds to oversee the preaching of the gospel in these various countries. And so, the funds that they're overseeing are not from the flock among them. The funds they're receiving are not for the flock among them. So if funds or any work does not pertain to the flock among them, is that in the domain of their oversight?
No.
Now you can call them elders, but that doesn't mean they're functioning as elders. I'm going to read something to you later if time permits. Back in the 1800s, there was a division over the missionary society. Brethren wanted to preach the gospel to the world. So what they did, they got a group of preachers, not churches, a group of preachers together. And churches would send their money to these preachers. And the overseeing board of that society would decide where the money went, to what preachers, and how long. And so the society stood between the church and the work. Brethren opposed it, and there was a division. The missionary society is not authorized. In the 30s and 40s, another effort was made to say, we need to preach the gospel to the world, but the missionary society is not authorized, but elders are. And so, instead of forming a separate society, the elders became the centralized oversight. What's the problem with that? The flock among them. They're not to function as a centralized oversight for churches. Anyway, that's what happens. And again, there was a division. And we have a division today because of that among churches. All right. So you have on your outline the word church used in two basic senses. There are actually four, at least four ways, but we're just looking right now at two. The church in the universal sense. John chapter 10, verse 16. How many flocks?
One.
Is that the same flock as Acts 20, 28?
No.
That flock in Acts 20, 28 is identified as what? The local church where? In Ephesus, verse 17. So because you see the word flock doesn't tell you whether it's talking about all Christians or a defined group of Christians based on locality. And so, but in John 10:16, there'll be one flock and one shepherd. That's the church in what we call the universal sense. Christ the shepherd over all Christians, in other words. Same thing in Ephesians 1:22. He's the head of the body of the church, and throughout that letter, the body collects those saved in Jesus Christ. Okay. Now the church locally. And we just talked about these three verses. They're very familiar to this class, I trust. Very good set of three verses to remember. And if you have difficulty remembering, write them in the front of your Bible somewhere. That can be so useful to you. Acts 14:23, along with Acts 20:28, 1 Peter 5:2. Let me ask you a question. That's only three verses. How many times did God have to tell Israel that the ark was to be carried by poles in the rings of it before he expected them to understand it?
One time.
And so we've not put 15 verses. You don't need them. If it's clear from one verse, then that's sufficient, isn't it? But we have two that say almost the same thing about this. Acts 20:28, 1 Peter 5:2. It's so clear that even the churches of Christ that differ with us on the sponsoring church arrangement understand what those verses teach. And even the Baptists do. I just read to you from Hiscock's manual. The question is, do we practice it? That's the question. Okay. Now, down at the bottom of your lesson, I have religious organizations other than the local church are unknown to the New Testament. Many, many years ago, I don't recall this in my lifetime, but I understand it went on. They would form organizations smaller than the local church. Ladies' Aid Societies, for example, to preach the gospel. And I guess they appointed a lady as the president. I don't know how they did it. So either larger or smaller than the local church, as far as Christians working together for the gospel, is just something unknown to the New Testament. All right. Now, so religious organizations other than the local church are unknown to the New Testament. There is no centralization of oversight among churches in the New Testament. Have I overlooked any passages that point to a centralization of oversight in the New Testament? All right, now, if we had time, but that's not our focus of study, we're studying denominationalism. It would be an interesting study to point out some of the verses that are used to try to justify the sponsoring church arrangement. There are verses that are... Now, the Jerusalem church is used to talk about a mother church, but I'm talking about even among brethren to justify churches centralizing their funds under one church to do a work. But we're not pursuing that path in this particular study. Now, I told you that Baptist churches claim to be independent and autonomous, and they do. The Southern Baptist churches, at least. I've got a letter from the Southern Baptist Convention written to David Bonner. You don't know David Bonner, probably. David Bonner was a gospel preacher. He's passed away. Great defender of the faith. And I think he had written to the Southern Baptist Convention, and they wrote him a letter back. And they claimed to be autonomous, but they were part of the Southern Baptist Convention. And so they say, we are autonomous even though we contribute to the Southern Baptist Convention because no one forces us to. We do that voluntarily. Therefore, we retain our autonomy. Let me ask you a question. A fellow wants to invest some money. One way he can invest money is go and buy stocks himself, do his own research. Say, I'm going to buy this stock and that stock and that stock. But let's suppose he doesn't feel confident in doing that, or he doesn't have time to do that. So he said, I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to send some money to a mutual funds company. Now, when you send your funds to the mutual funds company, do you retain oversight of what stocks they'll buy?
No. No.
You do not. Did they force you to send them?
No.
Can you opt out any time? Yes.
May cost you money.
May cost you money? But you can opt out. So, because you can opt out, they doesn't force you. Or that part of your fund, not all your money, but that part of your fund, did you retain autonomy? No. You willingly gave it up as to what stocks to buy. That didn't mean all your money, but that part of your money that you contributed to those funds, we understand that. So this idea that as long as it's not forced, therefore you have not lost your autonomy, is simply not so. It's simply not so. If a man doesn't understand leadership in his family and he don't want the responsibility, he might opt out of that role and just willingly let his wife be the leader. She maybe didn't force him. He doesn't have the manliness to lead. Because he chose to do that, does that mean he hasn't given up his autonomy? No, he's given it up voluntarily. And so we need to be careful about that. Another claim is, for example, among our Baptist friends, is that they haven't given up autonomy because all of their church's work is not under the denomination's oversight, which is true. In the Methodist church, that denomination, they choose the preacher. They may even tell them what the planned lessons are going to be, all that kind of thing. Depending on the denomination you're in as to how strongly it's controlled. Baptist churches, that's not true. They choose their own preachers, their own time of services, things like that. And so they are autonomous to a degree. That's correct. But they have given up willingly some part of their work when they submit their funds to the Southern Baptist Convention, and it decides what preachers, what programs, and all that they will support. Correct? The same is true with Churches of Christ. Churches of Christ will preach autonomy and practice autonomy about what preacher to select, when we're going to have a gospel meeting, where we're going to build a building, what kind of building it's going to be, whatever. But if they submit their funds to a centralized oversight to make the decisions about how those funds are spent in the preaching of the gospel or in benevolence, is that not the same thing as what our Baptist friends are doing? Okay, so am I correctly representing it? I've got some quotes here. If any of you want these quotes, I'd be glad to send them to you. Some of these are dated, but all that's happened because they're dated is it's gotten worse. So this is some years ago. This first one is Expo 72. Some of you weren't around in 72, but anyway. Expo 72. In an effort to study this question, we, the elders of the Pipeline Road Church in Hearst, have invited all preachers and elders in these two counties to meet together. Let me stop. Is there anything about that that raises your warning signs? Huh?
Can you read it again?
Okay, read it again. I'm going to read it again. Listen to me now. The elders of the Pipeline Road Church in Hearst have invited all preachers and elders in these two counties to meet together.
They're just calling the preachers and elders.
Sir?
They're just calling the preachers and elders instead of all the Christians.
Okay, well, let's rephrase it. Elders of the Pipeline Road Church have invited all the Christians in these two counties to meet together. I asked your question. Who said that? There you go. Thank you, Todd. Do they have any authority over preachers and elders and Christians in two counties? What are they calling them together for? Here's what they're calling them together for. It says they need to be advised and advised as to the probable power in the lives of members, especially the youth. But wait, I'm not finished. Agreement that churches of Christ must not, etc. What agreement between these elders and preachers in different churches? Is that it? And then, a little bit further it says, number three, proposals were advanced for literature and personal evangelism drives conducted by churches of Christ. Agreement that a few men be chosen to work out the details under the direction of the overseeing eldership. That's not me writing that. That's what they're saying. Here's a work that they're planning among churches of Christ. But there's going to be an overseeing eldership over this joint work. If that's not denominationalism as we've been reading about it, I guess I'm missing it. Somebody see a fallacy with my thinking?
No example of that anywhere in the Bible. There's no authority for it.
Okay. Now here's another one. World Radio is an evangelistic effort under the oversight of the Whites Ferry Road Church in West Monroe, Louisiana. Listen. Sister congregations and interested individuals all over the world participate in various parts of the work. Sister congregations. What is that? And so these sister congregations are operating in some work under the oversight of the Whites Ferry Road Church of Christ. If that's not centralization, y'all need to help me. And then, here's a third one. Many of you, especially if you've got a little gray hair, you've heard of this one. The Herald of Truth. The Herald of Truth at one time had about 1,500 churches contributing to it. And here's from their literature. This is not somebody that disagrees with it. They're describing it. The Herald of Truth radio program is a work of the Church of Christ at 5th and Highland, Abilene, Texas. The elders of this congregation direct and oversee every phase of this work. Remember, 1,500 churches contributing. But the elders at Highland Avenue control every phase of this work. Then in another article by Philip Morrison in the Christian Chronicle, he said, the Highland elders have two major responsibilities. the shepherding of a large local congregation, and the oversight of the International Herald of Truth ministry. And he saw nothing wrong with that. Tell me in the Bible where elders oversee anything other than the local church. So we talk about denominationalism. That's the kind of thing I'm afraid that we are drifting into among us, among our people. It was interesting to me. I did a little searching, and I found this article. Most of you are familiar with Wikipedia on the web. Unfortunately, about Wikipedia, you can get some bad information. You don't know who writes some of the stuff, but some of the things in this particular article is especially interesting, the way it's written, the terminology that's used. The writer, whoever it may be a combination of writers, but the sponsoring church arrangement describes a resource pooling strategy employed by some mainstream congregations of the churches of Christ. Stop. Is there anything I've read that's a problem? What? There's no such thing as congregations of the Church of Christ. What is he doing with the word church?
He's
grouping congregations. But the word church doesn't group congregations in the Bible. And we prayed with John that we want to follow the standard of truth of our Savior. Congregations of the, not churches, of the churches of Christ, whatever that is. Okay, under this arrangement, one congregation, specifically the congregation's eldership, or if it lacks elders, the men of the congregation, agree to oversee the work of an individual or group, such as a children's home. Other congregation or individual designed to support that work would send contributions to the overseeing congregation. Overseeing the local work?
No.
No. Further, he said the sponsoring church elders' congregation would still maintain control and oversight over the entity and its work. And he gives some examples like Gospel Broadcasting Network. And a particular one he gives is one which is overseen by the elder of the South Avon Church of Christ congregation, whatever that is. South Avon Church of Christ congregation. What is that? Isn't that double speak? When you say South Avon Church of Christ, haven't you said congregation already? Unless you're using Church of Christ arbitrarily of a theology. Okay? Now, this particular article says this differs from the Missionary Society. The denomination maintains oversight and control of the work apart from the local congregation. So he said, that's wrong. However, he said, as churches of Christ are autonomous local congregations and are intentionally non-denominational and oppose such... Oh, let me stop a minute. You ever see signs, non-denominational churches when you drive by? Go do a little investigating. Many of them are connected with the Southern Baptist Convention. I know that for a fact. So just because somebody said non-denominational doesn't mean that's the case. Okay, non-denominational and oppose such societies or boards as not part of the New Testament pattern. Amen. That's the criteria. Not part of the New Testament pattern. That's why the Missionary Society is wrong. Is the sponsoring church part of the New Testament pattern? If so, where? So he goes into the history back in the 1930s again, good intents, and by, I'm sure, good men. I don't know J.C. Brewer. I wasn't around in the 30s. I may look like I was around in the 20s, but I wasn't. But anyway, Bill probably knows him and Alexander Campbell, too. But anyway, Brewer encouraged church. Now, listen, Brewer encouraged Church of Christ congregations to actively support, both financially and through talents, the work and activities of Bible colleges or other institutional entities such as orphan homes or nursing homes, which may be traditionally associated with Churches of Christ. Look, I've been working on terminology that the church doesn't collect congregation. Well, why am I working on that? Here's the answer. Here's the history of it. Here's what leads to it. Our thinking leads to practice. If we don't get our thinking clear, it opens the door to doing things that are unscriptural. I found in this particular article something very interesting. Won't mean anything to many of you. How many of you know, I know Doris does, Foy E. Wallace, Jr.?
I hear.
This article said the movement, that is the sponsoring church movement, was famously opposed by Foy E. Wallace, Jr., but later he changed. But anyway, it was opposed by Foy Wallace. Very capable writer. Very capable preacher. Doris can tell you about that. So anyway, we're not talking about hypothetical things. We're talking about realities. We're talking about things that brethren are divided on. What difference does it make? What difference does it make? What difference does it make whether we support a missionary society? As long as the gospel is being preached. What difference does it make?
The pattern.
That's what we've read right here, too. That's right. What difference is it? Look, if you want to feed the poor, what difference does it make? If you don't have enough money, why not go steal some money from the rich and feed the poor? What difference does it make? You're getting the job done. That's it. Paul ever write that? Y'all know where? Romans 3. Read it. Look at Romans 3. Look at verse 8. This wasn't about the sponsoring church. It's about grace. Paul was arguing that God's grace is greater than our sin, and some were arguing, well, if that glorifies God, what we ought to do is sin more, so it'd be more grace. Well, that sounds pretty good. Glorify God more by His grace. No, Paul said, why not say, as we're slanderously reporting, as some affirm that we say, let us do evil that good may come. Look at this last statement. Their condemnation is just. Anybody that claims I teach that, I support that, their condemnation is just. So that old argument that, well, it does good. The Knights of Columbus do good. Doesn't mean they're right, the way they're organized, the things they teach. I understand the mob in Mexico, the cartels, will often build houses for poor people. So I guess that's okay. It's easy to fall into these traps. All right, look at our questions. Fill in the blank. Number one, Baptist churches, administration conventions, Baptist denomination. Methodist churches, conference, Methodist denomination. Lutheran churches ruled by synod, Lutheran denomination. Churches of Christ under the administration of a sponsoring church is what?
Domination.
Church of Christ denomination. Well, the brethren who do that agree? No. Would the Baptists agree that they have a denomination?
No.
No. So, you have to decide for yourself. Bill made a statement before class. He said, you know, Philippians 2 says, work out your own salvation with fear and trembling. That's exactly what you got to do. You got to figure it out for yourself. All right, number two, denominations allow many churches to combine their resources to do what one church cannot. Moreover, it enables churches to select from a broad basis to find the most knowledgeable and capable men to lead. Is this good? Why is it not good? Ends doesn't justify the means. Has there ever been in history that you're familiar with people who thought that if we united under a central government, we could do more and it would be good?
When they asked for a king.
God had judges in various parts of the country and said, we want a king. Yes. And there are several problems when you put churches or territories or whatever, just like in the case of the judges, you put them under a centralized government. If there's an apostasy when you got separate governments, maybe everybody don't go down the stream. But when you got a centralized government and it goes astray, it takes the whole group with you. That's what you see in the story of the king. Secondly, it broadens the scope of influence when apostasy takes place because more people are under that influence. And thirdly, there's less individual participation. Ministers that are supported relate to the sponsoring church, not to the individual congregations, as far as accountability and their work and that kind of thing. And the congregations are not as involved in talking to these men, trying to find out if they're supported. They just send their money, and the sponsoring church decides that. And then I put number four, and I don't know enough about this. I had heard some sermons preached by a fellow that had been in that movement for 25 years talk about some of this, but I'm not knowledgeable enough to know, but about overhead expense. So when you start forming societies or organizations, oftentimes there's some kind of overhead expense that's involved, but that's another question. So when we talk about good, there may be some good being done, but along with it may come some evil, and even if it does good, it doesn't justify the means. Our time is up. We'll pick up with number 3. Finish lesson 9, the Lord willing, and get into lesson 10. Lesson 10 will be a totally different type of study. We're going to start talking about denominational attitude. The lessons are in the back. Welcome to pick them up. Thank you so much for your attention and your comments tonight.